Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Howie Hawkins, who ran on the Green Party line in 2020. And he is here to talk about the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. So, Howie, what was your impression, and did you watch it Saturday?
Well, I didn't sit through the whole thing. I watched parts of it and, you know, caught news, you know, broadcasts and discussions of it. But my impression was the Democrats pulled their punches, didn't make a serious effort to get Trump convicted. They wanted to get the trial over with and on to other business. And, you know, they say they couldn't get a conviction, so that's why they did a half-assed effort. But they didn't really give it a chance. First of all, they should have called a lot of witnesses instead of just paper documents and video and have, you know, real live human beings testify to how Trump, you know, set this up. And, you know, that's basically what those witnesses could have documented in a much more vivid way than the videos of the riot and the paper documents they submitted. And this was not just for the senators who are gutless and shameless, but the GOP senators, but for history to document what happened and for the public. And as the trial went on, there could have been rising outrage that eventually would have moved those senators who are obviously just acting on narrow political grounds. They're afraid of getting primaried by, you know, Trump supporters. And that's why they're gutless. And that's why they're shameless. But the political equation could have changed if they'd called witnesses and drawn this thing out and kept bringing new revelations to how Trump was complicit and actually planning this effort to stop the counting of the Electoral College vote. And perhaps with the people that went in there with the intent of taking members of Congress hostage and possibly killing them, you know, Trump's game plan was to declare martial law and just try to, you know, rule that way. I don't think the military would have gone along with him. Trump isn't very competent in anything he does, but that's what he planned to do. And witnesses could have documented that and could have changed the whole equation. But instead, the Democrats decided they wanted to get this over with quickly so they could go back to Biden's agenda. But that's no excuse. First of all, these members of Congress only work three-day weeks. And most of the time when they're down there, they're dialing for dollars. They could have worked full days, 5 days or 6 days a week, and spent half the day on the trial and half the day taking care of other business. You know, there's no excuse. That idea that there wasn't time, that we got to move on to this other agenda, that's no excuse.
So everybody uses a cell phone today. So whether they make their calls in Washington for fundraising or whether they do it in their district, it's still going to be on the same phone. So why are they taking up the people's time in Washington raising money?
Because that's what their campaign managers, the Democratic and Republican national committees, say they got to do if they want support from the national committees. I mean, we had a Congress member here from Syracuse who had a sign in his coat closet to make his calls when he, you know, finished whatever other business he was doing for the day. It's, you know, the staff does most of the work, and the members of Congress, you know, come out and vote, maybe speak to the media once in a while, but most of them are not really engaged. It's a shame.
How long has it been like that? As far back
as you can remember? It's been getting worse and worse. I mean, I remember going down during the Vietnam War and, you know, going into offices and lobbying members of Congress to support the McGovern-Hatfield Amendment to cut off funding. And members of Congress were there And sometimes you talk to them directly, sometimes with their staff. But it's really changed now. I mean, they're so isolated. And even when you go to a town hall meeting, as they call them, you can't speak from the floor. You write your question down on a card and they can ignore you. It's just really changed. Now, the money thing, post-Watergate, Democrats came in and their attitude was, well, blacks, minorities, environmentalists, peace activists, women aren't going for the Republican Party, so we might as well go all out for the corporate money too and try to win them and just rule that way. Now, they didn't work. Reagan got elected soon because they weren't delivering for the people as we, had those economic problems in the 70s. But it just got worse and worse, and particularly in an accelerating way. I mean, look at the presidential elections. It used to be, until Barack Obama, that all the major party presidential candidates took the money that the Federal Election Commission Fund gave them for their fall election. The equal grant for both parties. This year would have been $100 million. But Obama said, after saying he would take it, said, no, I'm opting out because I can raise more money from, the big money, the private money. McCain had to run on it because he didn't have as much money. But he was the last one to use it. Now, the formula for what that grant is adjusted by a formula. It's been going up since the post-Watergate era. But it's $100 million. This year, both Biden and Trump spent about $3 billion, which is 30 times more. So they don't take the public money anymore. It's just private money is growing in elections at an accelerating rate. It's unbelievable, and it swamps everything else.
You talk about vast sums of money in this last campaign. Who are these people that donate to presidential candidates?
Well, most of the money is raised from the high-rolling fat cats. So, for example, both Biden and Trump sent up victory funds, which are joint fundraising operations with their respective national committees and their state parties. And so that gets around the $5,600 limit that individuals could give directly to the campaign committees of the candidates. So the Biden victory fund, they could legally give up to a little over $620,000 each. So Biden was having, Zoom fundraisers, and to get in, you had to pledge $500,000, $500,000. That's how the rich rule. That's where most of the money came. Now, a lot of people, frankly, I think they're suckers. The rich people are going to pay for these campaigns. So the little people, go in for these small donor things. Trump raised a lot of money that way, after the election, saying we're going to stop the steal and all that nonsense. But he's really going to use that money for his defense for these civil and criminal cases he's got coming up. So he scammed his own people. And I think, people that give small amounts to these major party candidates, that money, there are a lot of people that give a little, but it doesn't come near to what the fat cats give with these workarounds. The $5,600 limit, that's $2,800 for both the primary and the general election. That's the max an individual can give. But they got workarounds. They can give to these victory funds, these joint fundraising committees. They can give to these 501c4 organizations who don't have to report their donors, who in turn can spend some money on elections and also give that money to super PACs. And super PACs say they got it from the 501c4 organization. You don't know where the original money came from. So anybody, some rich American, or it could be somebody foreign, could be giving money to these 501c4s, and it gets into our election system. It's called dark money. So, our elections are up for sale. It's a terrible system.
Ralph Nader wrote an article in today's Counterpunch, and he said Speaker Pelosi, the puppeteer of the House managers, took impeachment to the Senate without a full hand. But before I ask you to elaborate on this, for people like Jamie Raskin, who, I mean, it just felt so bad because his son died just a little while ago. I mean, everybody just fell in line to do. How did that work?
Yeah, that's the way that works. The speaker or the leader of each party has a lot of power. So I think Jamie Raskin did a good job with the hand he was dealt. But it was Pelosi that dealt him that hand. And that was, we're going to have a short trial. We're going to get this over with. We know we're not going to get convictions. So, you know, make your presentation and then get a vote and we move on. So, you know, she really wasn't focused on convicting Trump because that would have taken a longer trial with the kind of witnesses I was talking about. I mean, there's so many witnesses. I mean, I'm just thinking now this guy, Garrett Miller from Texas, who tweeted during the riot, we're going to assassinate AOC. And even after the riot was saying, we're going to go kill that Capitol police officer that shot the woman that was trying to, you know, go through that window into the, I guess it was the Senate chamber, maybe the House chamber, when, you know, members were still in there. I think it was the House chamber. And now he's repenting. I mean, he's in jail waiting trial. He's saying, oh, I did what Trump said. Now I believe Biden is the president. He's ready to sing like a canary. So he should have been brought and told how, you know, what Trump said got him to that riot. I mean, there are so many witnesses that would have made this vivid and got the public more outraged. And then maybe some of those senators would have, their political equation, their calculation would have changed. And we could have got a conviction.
So had Nancy Pelosi not been reelected to speaker, and there was another person who is more aggressive than Nancy Pelosi, you think that could have led to a different outcome?
Yeah, but that would never happen with the Democratic caucus. You know, the corporate centrists dominate, and Pelosi is, you know, their leader. I think that's illustrated by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wanted to get on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which deals
right.
with her top priorities, like Medicare for All and Green New Deal. And she put herself forward when the seat that Elliot Engels vacated, and the corporate Democrats got Kathleen Rice down there on Long Island, who showed no interest in those kind of issues, but she's a, you know, corporate conservative in the Democratic Party. And so when the to run against AOC, and when the steering policy and steering committee, which is the leadership of the Democratic House caucus, voted, it was 46-13 for Rice over AOC. That tells you the balance of forces there. So no progressive was going to get elected by this caucus, and none ran. There was no challenge from the progressives. I mean, they could see the balance of forces. It would have been, you know, sure defeat. Maybe they could have raised some issues for the public to see, but they chose not to. They're trying to, you know, work with Pelosi rather than fight her.
To the detriment of the American people, right?
Does what to the American people?
To the detriment.
To their
detriment.
Yeah.
Of the American people. Now,
yeah,
I remember one time meeting Jill Stein when she came to the Albany area, and she had said that because the Democrats are going further to the right, then that forces the Republicans to even go further to the right. So at some point, this is not good. What do you think ultimately what will happen?
Well, I don't think the Democrats are forcing the Republicans to the right. They're chasing them to the right. Because there is no left.
Okay.
Because the centrist Democrats can take the left for granted, whether it's outside the Democratic Party, like the Green Party, or inside, like the Progressive Caucus, you know, the people like AOC. Because progressive Democrats pose no threat of exiting to the independent left, because we, under our voting system, plurality winner system, most progressives settle for the centrist Democrat to stop the far-right Republican. So the left is basically marginalized by that system. I mean, I think what we got to work toward, and there's a lot of energy for this these days, is toward a system of ranked choice voting, including ranked choice voting for multi-member districts, which will lead to a multi-party system with proportional representation. There's a bill in Congress called the Fair Representation Act that would facilitate that. It doesn't have a lot of sponsors. But at the state and local level, there are campaigns now in 20 states to expand ranked choice voting. We have it now in 38 cities and two states. And we got six new cities in one state in this last election. I think that is the most important game-changing reform we can win in the next period. Because at the federal level, the best Biden's going to do is a little relief, you know, COVID relief, little economic stimulus, but foreign policy, basic economic policy. I mean, there's no job guarantee. There's not going to be health care guarantee through Medicare for All. The climate policy is terrible. I mean, it's pro-nuclear, it's pro-natural gas, carbon sequestration, and the amount of money available for renewables is far short of what's needed, and mostly it's market-based incentives, you know, tax breaks. What we need is, you know, we need to do it through the public sector with planning and coordination to transform our economy, decarbonize it on the time scale we need to do. It's not even being approached by the Biden administration. So, you know, we'll get a little, and Trump is a low bar, so, that, you know, some things can be corrected that he did, but that's about as far as they'll go. So the left, you know, in this situation, until we change the electoral system, is going to be marginalized. So what's in the future? It'll be what we've seen in the past. The Democrats chase swing voters in the center because they take their left for granted, and chase the Republicans to the right, who we've seen, you know, they're no longer the conservative party of small government and fiscal conservatism. They are the embodiment of that old strain of, you know, white supremacy that the Dixiecrats used to embody, and now the Republicans embody. Now, that's a minority in the country, but given our, you know, federal institutions that magnify the power of minorities, like the U.S. Senate and the Electoral College, they can still be powerful and influential. And also the filibuster. You know, if the Democrats don't get rid of the filibuster, they're going to get very little done. And the Republicans are then going to blame them and come back with their formula of scapegoating immigrants, racial minorities, and, you know, conspiracy elites, you know, like the QAnon thing was saying, you know, basically these delusions of, the hardcore of the Trump base is divorced from reality. I mean, it's that evangelical, fundamentalist Christian white base that was the, you know, core base of, you know, Jim Crow segregation and still has those racial attitudes. And they're irrational. They don't believe in evolution, COVID, climate change, and are easily susceptible to these scapegoating narratives about immigrants, minorities, and elite conspiracies.
Trump's game plan was to get rid of Pelosi and Pence. I can't even imagine being in Pence's shoes after 4 years of being so loyal to Trump. He must feel horrible right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's probably a little surprised they went this far. I would imagine he's been quiet, you know. He's not said much since January 6th. And
right.
I'm sure he's reflecting on what happened to him and what his future is. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was close to Trump. He should have seen it coming. Trump's all about Trump. Nobody can count on his support over the long run. If you don't do what he says, he crosses you, then you become an object of his vengeance.
So it's a terrible situation. The whole trial, I mean, it lasted just a few days, and, you know, there was talk Saturday morning of possibly calling witnesses, and then that was discarded. At that point, were you excited that there would be witnesses?
Yeah, but I'm cynical. I suspected what happened would happen. And now we know Chris Coons, senator from Delaware, kind of Biden's whisperer, you know, went to them and said, if you do this, the trial's going to drag on. And he said, people want to get home for Valentine's Day.
Really?
You know, that's what he said. And, you know, and Pelosi didn't want the trial to drag on, so the House managers were pressured into accepting written testimony from this witness that would be put in the record rather than a living, breathing person testifying to her conversation with Kevin McCarthy about what Trump told McCarthy when McCarthy, you know, pleaded with Trump to call off these rioters. And Trump told him, gee, Kevin, they seem to care more about upset about this election than you are. I mean, that kind of testimony would have, you know, been powerful. But they didn't do it. And you know, this Representative Jaime Herrera Butler should have been one of many.
Mm-hmm. So do you think Nancy Pelosi is happy with herself that it went this way?
Yeah, I think so. She got what she wanted, a short trial, and now she can, you know, scold the Republicans that voted for acquittal and, you know, posture instead of get a conviction. And now, you know, they're going to move on to the Biden agenda. But like I said, if they don't get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, they're not going to get very far.
What do you think of Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney?
Well, they're those old school, small government, fiscal conservative, hawkish foreign policy Republicans. But right now, the base of the party and the state party apparatus in most states is very hostile to them. I mean, Cheney's getting attacked by the Wyoming Republican Party. These senators that voted for conviction, like the guy from Louisiana and the guy from North Carolina, Burr, they're getting denounced by their own state parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think Romney and Cheney are in a difficult position in the Republican Party. You know, and I don't know if the party's going to hold together. You know, there's talk about both Trump starting a third party and these Never Trump Republicans starting their own party. I think they'll both fight over the Republican Party in the primaries in 2022. And then we'll see, you know, what the balance of forces is there. But, you know, the primaries bring out the more, you know, ideologically committed, who tend to be the further right. You know, Lisa Murkowski in Alaska she lost the primary to a Trumpist, and then beat him in the general election in a write-in vote, which is quite a feat. So, but, you know, it really depends in the end on what the base of the Republican Party does. And, you know, my take on it is out of those 74 million that voted for Trump, about 50 million, they're far-right races. You know, that's the evangelical white fundamentalist Christian core. And they're only about 15% of the population, but they were about 28% of the total vote because they turn out, like 90% of them turned out.
Right.
So they have influence that way. But
mm-hmm.
that other,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe 24 million, you look at the demographics and the exit polls and interviews, those people are feeling the economic hurt. And they heard Trump saying he was going to reopen the economy, and they heard Biden say, we're going to reunite the country. And they said, well, Trump's talking about my problems, so I'm going to vote for him. I think those people can be peeled away from the far right with a progressive economic program that addresses their needs. Not all of them, but, you know, a good fraction of them. And the question is whether the Democrats will, you know, do something that gets those people to say, okay, the Democrats are dealing with my problems. And I'm not optimistic about that because looks like the filibuster's here to stay and Biden is hamstrung.
So we just have a little over a minute left. Do you think we've heard the last of Donald Trump?
I think we're going to hear a lot about him in civil and criminal cases. And he will probably try to keep having a political presence to raise money for his legal problems. No, we haven't heard the last of Trump. His kids are ambitious. And he is the symptom of a deeper problem, this far-right movement, which has been attached to Trump personally, but there are other people who want to take the lead of it. You know, the Ted Cruz's and the Josh Hawley's.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to be dealing with Trumpism for a while.
Okay, so on that note, Howie, we have to say goodbye to our listeners. You've been listening to Howie Hawkins. If somebody wants to contact you, how could they do so?
Go to my campaign website, howiehawkins.us, and there's a way to contact us on the website.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Howie. We'll talk again, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.